I want to welcome everyone to the August 19th, 2008 San Luis Coastal Unified School District Board of Trustee meeting. And before we begin the agenda in closed session, the board discussed three issues, one involving real property, one involving labor negotiations, and the third involved a student discipline issue. And I would ask the board now to indicate if they wish any change to the agenda that's scheduled for tonight. Seeing none, there was no correspondence, I believe, to report upon or to present. Well, I'm just looking at our agenda item. It says there were none. About what? Well, that pretty much had to do with the closed session item, so we wouldn't mention them in open session, I don't believe. Yeah, I don't know. You can go ahead and make a comment if you like.
Has had comments about that before, about what's considered?
I think what Adrian and Walter are asking is correspondence sent via email to board members about something that was discussed in closed session. Is that considered a correspondence to the board? Does that sum it up? Okay.
It's just that they came in after our cutoff, and that's the reason they're not in your agenda packet now. They could be included in the packet as official correspondence next time if there's any value to that, but you might decide that now that you have them all and you talked about that in closed session, that it isn't worth including those again.
It's okay to acknowledge that correspondence at this time.
Okay. Walt, would you like to do that then? And
thank you, John. I just would acknowledge the two email correspondence we received relative to school site location that was discussed in closed session.
Okay. Thank you, Walt, very much. Carolyn, to direct the board to review and do her motions and seconds, please.
I'll make a motion to approve June 17, 2008 meeting minutes.
And I'll second.
We have a, I'm sorry, you could do it, Marilyn.
Those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. I just had a quick question. It's not really anything. You know, we used to refer to San Luis High School as SLOHS when my kids went through, but now everything's only four letters. It's like a code. Okay.
Both those abbreviations are accepted.
Okay. We want to keep parity between the two high schools.
So the minutes of the meeting of June 17th have been moved and seconded. Those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed?
I abstained.
Passed. And with one abstention by Mr. Spadafore. So it would be six in favor with one abstention.
Thank you very much, Marilyn. The next minutes were for the board meeting of June 24th, 2008. Do we have a motion?
I'll make the motion.
We have a motion by Mark.
I'll second.
We have a second by Catherine. Any discussion? Hearing none, all in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Passes 7-0. Then the third set of minutes is for the meeting of July 15th, 2008, which was the board evaluation retreat. Do I have a motion?
I'll move it.
We have a motion by Marilyn. A second? By Adrian. Second by Adrian. Any discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Okay. Now, I think public comment may be the appropriate thing. 3 minutes, so we have a time frame. And I believe we have two members of the community that submitted a request. The first is Linda Kempegi. Did I pronounce that correctly?
You certainly did.
Well, thank you. Thank you for being here. Go ahead.
Thank you. And my name is Linda Kempegi, and I'm a teacher at Morro Bay High School, special ed teacher. And first of all, I want to thank all of you for your time and dedication to our students. I know that you probably aren't told that often enough, but we do appreciate it. My primary reason for being here is to be a voice for many students who have no one to speak for them. These are the many students who do not fit the academic mold, nor do they have a disability that puts them in the special ed spectrum. Although I have many times thought of speaking for these students, I felt compelled when I recently saw a Bruce Springsteen interview on 60. Many of our elective programs, such as auto, music, art, dance, theater, metal shop, wood shop, home economics, agriculture, etc., inspire students to stay in school. Furthermore, many of our electives help students make concrete academic connections in math and English in a way that our traditional academic courses cannot. Some struggling freshmen and sophomores, for instance, at Morro Bay High School, have the following schedule: an English class, a reading class, a math remediation class, then they need PE and they need social studies. That leaves no electives. In their junior and senior year, they must complete their science and other grad requirements. This course of study feels punitive, not constructive to these students. Did that mean I'm out of time?
No, that doesn't mean
okay.
That means we're still a step behind the orchestra here.
We don't want to turn our students off to learning, and that is why I want you to always consider the importance of continuing and expanding our elective programs. High school should be an avenue to diverse experiences, helping students to decide and prepare for their futures. Our electives help students make those decisions. We have many smart, hidden students, such as Bruce Springsteen was, who need the various educational experiences to open their minds. Thank you once again for your time and concern. Okay.
Thank you very much, Linda. And I want to thank you for cutting your vacation, which is almost over, by coming to the board meeting tonight and sharing that, because it's a concern that we've had in many different areas that we've discussed, and it's wonderful to hear from teachers relative to the classroom and your aspect. Thank you. I think we have one other speaker who had asked to present information to the board. Mr. McKee, please. Thank you.
Is that how this works? My name is Denny McKee. I also am a teacher. Okay, far too often the student is primarily blamed for his performance in school. Missing assignments, lack of effort, inattention, or learning disability are some of the reasons often cited. But I'll wager there's a fair to middling chance the instructional strategies employed by the teacher, the curriculum materials used in the classroom, or the management decisions of the school system could also be the culprits. Some of these kids start falling behind in school, and these kids can benefit from accelerated instruction. When I speak of accelerated instruction, I don't mean more topics stuffed into a shorter time span, as happens in most are scripted. The delivery of a DI lesson is characterized by a rapid pacing and choral responses. I could do some right here, punctuated by individual turns. A motto often repeated by experienced direct instruction teachers is, if the student didn't learn, the teacher didn't teach. And it's hard for some folks to swallow. I've got a one-page description of direct instruction written by Bonnie Grossen. I've also got an overview of a direct instruction program recently published by SRA that took 4 years to develop, of which two of those years the program was field-tested in classrooms. I wager a dime to a donut the majority of your textbooks have not had that type of, you know, gone over that kind of development or scrutiny. As a matter of fact, I just recently got done exchanging emails with a guy named Don Larson, who happens to be one of the authors of your Algebra Concepts Books 1. And it was interesting, in my emails back and forth with the gentleman, I questioned the effectiveness of teaching, you know, things in units. And because, you know, one example would be a kid might get fractions, let's say in March, of let's say the third or fourth grade year, and the kid, all of a sudden that unit ends after 3 weeks, and it doesn't show back up possibly until November of the following school year. My kids own the seventh grade pre-algebra book, has fractions in I think chapter 6. And if you think about it, chapter 6 might not be covered until December. It's out of 12 chapters. Well, the kids probably may not have even seen a fraction since they got out of school in June, and suddenly now, 6-7 months later, boom, they get hit with fractions. For the kids who have mastered those things prior to that, they've got it made. But for those kids who struggled with fractions, now here it goes again. So that's what I mean by the curriculum. There's more I could say. If you're interested in more of the stuff about direct instruction, my phone number's in my phone number's in the phone book, okay?
And also, if there's any of that material you want to leave to have the board look at, you can do that at the district office if there's some things you want to copy and leave.
No, I can just leave right here with you guys.
Okay. Thank you very much.
And John, would you add, Mr. McKee, what was the spelling on the Bonnie Gross?
Bonnie Grossman's right here.
Okay. Thanks.
Put those into Mr. Millar's custody.
Okay. All right, I'll get them.
Thank you.
Thank you very much, Mr. McKee, very much. Reports by school staff, administrators, or board members, please. Since it's the beginning of the year, there may not be, but Mr. Buckman, I see that.
I'm just going to take advantage of this time.
Education Coalition at the CTA President's Conference and with the CTA Board of Directors about 3 weeks ago, and there was support from the Education Coalition for exactly what Mark's talking about.
Okay, thank you. Any other reports at this time? Walt?
I just would be remiss if I didn't acknowledge the work of Slow Chamber Leadership Class 16. They undertook to help revamp the Tiny Tigers playground and entry level. Amazing difference. Sue Waterbury was thrilled, and it was a nice reception the other day. Mr. Buckman was there, and Chris was there. And it was, and two of our seniors at Slo High, who were very successful in the statewide Skills USA, Nick and, I'm drawing a blank, but they did the work, they did amazing work on the gate and part of the decorations for it, and it was really a remarkable program. Thanks to the Slo Chamber and Leadership 16.
Thank you, Walt. Adrian?
We had company arriving that day, and our son, Roland, came with his wife, Catherine Chivens Dickinson. And we didn't find out just when they came this week, but they're expecting a baby. So we are going to be grandparents for the first time, which is really fun, in the middle of March.
You'll be terrific grandparents.
Thank you.
Chris?
I just wanted to add what Walter was saying. One of the things that the students at San Luis Obispo High School did was this gate, and they used the plasma cutter that we had approved, I believe it was last year, for the metal shop. So that was really exciting to see the great work that they did.
And there was a member of the public here tonight who commented upon the Baywood Elementary School facility as he was walking his dog, saying that the children are using it and enjoying it as we sit.
Played on it for an hour myself.
Thank you for that. Any other board reports? It took a while, but now we're warming up, and I can see that we're going. Yeah. Okay.
Give me a second.
Okay. No, time's up. All right. Thank you, Mr. Miller, for the status of the state budget, please.
The status is there is no state budget. Doesn't look like there's gonna be, and we await some sort of a compromise. And one of the things the education community is looking for is support, as Mark talked about, and it would be a great thing for everybody to drop an email or a letter or something to their representative who expressing concern about seem to miraculously come to some sort of an agreement. So we just have to be patient, I guess.
That was very short and to the point.
I got nothing
for the
else.
Sake of brevity and saving ink, should we just remove the budget portion of our agenda from here on out? Okay. Thank you very much, Russell. We have a public hearing tonight on the proposed 2006, 2007, 2007, 2008 agreement with our San Luis Coastal Teachers Association. And I would ask Mr. Robinette to present that, please, for public discussion.
Sure. As you know, we have concluded negotiations with the San Luis Coastal Teachers Association after almost 2 years on the 2006-07 and 07-08 school year contract, and it has been ratified by the Teachers Association and has gone through the AB 1200 process at the county, and so we are required to have a public hearing prior to the board approving the agreement, which will show up later in the action consent agenda.
Okay, thank you very much, Mr. Robin. And I would ask that if there is anyone from the public who would like to address the board regarding the agreement that's been reached with the San Luis Coastal Teachers Association, now would be the appropriate time. Seeing none, we will move on to item number 4, which is a resolution regarding the delegation of signature authority, and this is going to be presented by Associate Assistant Superintendent Russell Miller.
Thank you. And this is an annual event that the board goes through in terms of authorizing signatures on its bank accounts. This time, the delegation of signature authority resolution calls out for Julie Lang, our Director of Fiscal Services, Mary Matakovich, Assistant Superintendent, myself, Rick Robinette as Director of Personnel, and Dr. Valentine as Superintendent to be designated signees on our bank accounts and other legal documents.
Move resolution.
Well, I was just going to ask one thing before you go on. Is there a further statement regarding Karen Bright?
Oh, I'm sorry. And Karen
just so
Bright.
We have that.
Yes, Karen Bright would be authorized for purchase order to sign off on purchase orders not exceeding $500.
Thank you very much. And is there a motion?
I'll move resolution 10809, delegation of signature authority.
We have a motion by Mr. Millar and a second by Adrian Dixon. And I believe, Ms. Hughes, this is a roll call vote.
Mr. Millar. Mrs. Dickinson. Mr. Unger.
Yes.
Mr. Spatafor.
Yes.
Ms.
13, and as of today, we found out about another one. So that board item said 20. Now we have 21. And in order for us, we really believe that in order to be able to provide a consistent and a quality program for those teachers, it would be beneficial to increase our current BITSA coordinator position by a 0.5 as her load has doubled, and that would allow her to then meet those needs.
Thank you very much, Rita. Are there any questions that the board may have for Rita, and also any consideration that this might be put to a vote tonight? Mark, first, please, and then we'll
go this one. Rita, I fully support this. I'm wondering if you could lay some numbers. How many new teachers are on board? Can you say that again?
Seven over last year. So we had 13, and now we have 21.
21, okay. Thanks.
And Marilyn, and then Chris?
Eight. Oh,
I'm sorry.
Well, I think that if, I don't know if Chris has questions. I was just going to say that I support this, and I would move that we take action on it tonight.
I have a question.
Okay, and then we'll go Chris and then Walt, please.
I would support that. And also, I think Mrs. Lucas is here tonight.
Mm-hmm.
And so,
in case you had any questions, she's joining us.
Okay, thanks for doing that. Thank you for coming tonight. Walt.
Thank you, John. Rita, so it's first and second year BITSA teachers. So the numbers were just a little confusing to me. So it's, we have the teachers from last year. In addition, we picked up seven additional teachers for this year.
We have seven more than last year, yes.
Thank you.
Thank you. Any other questions for Ms. Delkiscamp? Is anyone interested in making a motion?
Yeah, I'll make the motion to increase the teacher on special assignment, the BITSA support provider from 0.5 to full-time assignment.
I'll second.
Seconded by Mark. Any further discussion before a vote's taken? Yes, Adrian.
So we have the teacher right here. Did you want to introduce her?
Sure. Come on up, Tina. Tina Lucas has been a teacher at Baywood, and then this past year she was working 0.5 as a kindergarten teacher at Baywood and 0.5 as our BITSA coordinator, and she's done a great job. She's a hard worker, really organizes it.
To work with their mentor to complete certain documents that the state requires in order for them to get a clear credential.
Mm-hmm.
We are a credentialing program, and that's what we're trying to help them achieve. There are no other assignments than going in and sitting with them and talking, how's the day going? What's your plan for the year? What goals do you have? Mid-year, we review the goals. The end of the year, we reflect on the goals. We work with them to help use the CSTPs to improve their practice. It's a plan, teach, reflect process.
Mm-hmm.
It's a continual process that goes on all through the entire year, and we hope that they will eventually leave the BITSA program as professional reflective practitioners, so that in their lifelong journey through the teaching profession, they'll constantly reflect on what they've done and make changes as needed. So they have no other assignments than attending workshops that usually have to do with special ed or EL or differentiation processes. They also, in addition to completing the forms, have an end-of-the-year celebration, which we call colloquium, where we just celebrate all the wonderful achievements they've made for the year.
That support from each other is really important, too, so they don't feel isolated.
Absolutely, no. Mm-hmm. We were there. We try to meet with them once a week. The goal is, according to the regulations, is to meet with them an hour, but it tends to be an hour, 45 minutes a week per teacher. And there's usually an hour follow-up for myself, the coordinator, in logging in our visits, getting resources for them, providing necessary materials that they might need, and to also to prepare for the workshops based upon their individual needs.
Well, thank you for that.
You're
wonderful summary.
Thank you. Are there any other questions from the board? Thank you very much. And Rita, thank you. We have a motion by Marilyn and a second by Mark regarding item number 5. If there's no further discussion, all in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Passes 7-0. Thank you again very much. The next item on the agenda, number 6, Jackie Kirk Martinez, Director of Student Services, regarding a request for a program specialist. Thank you, Jackie.
Hey. Welcome, Board of Education, administration, staff, and community members. The agenda I am bringing before you tonight is in regards to the growing identification of students with autism. In 2007 and 2008, the district began an intensive goal, and that was to design and build a quality and defensible program of services for students with autism. This program service is supported by one program specialist who works closely with the general program or a combination thereof. This last spring, the district identified 10 additional students requiring the autism service. In addition, 11 students who had this service on their IEP that is transferred from the County Office of Education. The population of students identified with autism is ever-growing, and requiring this service went from 17 students this last year to the growing beginning of the school year next week to 38. To clarify, currently we have 3 certificated program specialists in student services who don't only serve students with special needs, but they also support staff and students who exhibit at-risk behaviors and challenges, and the staff needs support throughout the district. The program specialist for autism supports the 17 students currently, along with supporting the general education staff, the special education staff, and support staff. This request for an additional program specialist for autism would be to support the ongoing growing identification. Training, we provide training for all of our special education paraeducators. We use a best practice approach for our training, and one of those focus areas in our modules is data collection. It's critical in determining the progress that our students are making towards goals and towards their state standards as well. Currently, we utilize Autism Partnership to consult with the district. They support, advise the program specialists, the general education staff, administration, and they help to support our training modules as well. This consultant does not take the place of a program specialist. San Luis Coastal is focused on managing and providing quality services that support our children with autism in our community and deliver it by qualified staff. In order to continue the implementation and quality program autism services, the district is requesting approval from the board tonight to add an additional program specialist to support the students with autism. The physical impact has an estimated cost for one full-time program specialist. Salary and benefits are included as noted. Russell is also prepared to discuss additional information in terms of block costs or additional information that you might need to gather or have.
Regarding finance.
And right, without the county office. Russell, I'm curious, with the additional costs that we're talking about, how are we doing on a comparison of costs that the district is providing as opposed to what the County Office of Education was providing?
And I think before, Russell, there's going to be some additional information just before.
I wanted to provide some clarification. We have three program specialists, and they actually have three job descriptions. Program specialist behavior intervention, and that is Julie Kragenbrink. And then we have program specialist for autism. So there are three distinct different program specialists. I just wanted to clarify that.
Okay, thanks. And then before we go on to the questions, Russell, to make this consistent, you'll do this to answer Chris's question? Okay, thanks.
Yeah, I'll focus on Chris's question. We have been soliciting and preparing cost comparisons from the districts within the county. And so far, there's been five districts of the 10 that have prepared a block cost model that they have assigned costs and expenditures to each specific special ed program, ED, special day class, severely handicapped. All of those types of classes have costs assigned to them. At this time, been able to accumulate three specific districts with a particular kind of program. This is a special day class program, and I'll just run through the expenditures and the costs real quickly. I have a bigger overhead which has the individual districts, but it's not up there because I can't compare it all on one. So the very first one that we see at the top is the San Luis Obispo County Office of Education. And you will see that they have a number of expenditure categories: teacher, teacher substitutes, aid, aid substitutes, nursing, psychologist, speech, DIS, etc. Their total cost for a classroom is $247,000. Then Paso Robles is the middle one, and they have, they have program costs for their classroom, such as classroom teacher, teacher substitutes, paraeducator, $180,000. And then centers to offer. We're not putting together a schedule of costs which include already scheduled expenditures such as substitutes, facilities, maintenance, custodial, and those kinds of things. We figure that the seven students are going to get those costs anyway. We don't need to allocate those out when we go to fill our third chair, our three chairs. We will offer to, let's say, Coast Unified a chair in our SDC class at a cost of $14,398 per student. That's the $143,984 divided by 10. That's the optimum number of students in that classroom. And if they choose to, they can come and sign up in our district. Per our countywide agreement, they can sign up in our district and pay us the fee. Paso Robles has done essentially the same thing. They have put together a schedule of expenditures for which they are going to charge districts who want to send children to their program, and they'll charge out at about $18,000 a student. The county office has done the same thing. County office is in a position where they have to allocate costs at a greater percentage because of the way their entity is structured, as opposed to school districts, which already have classrooms built into their structure. They don't need to allocate additional costs. So the comparison of the costs that Chris is talking about is consistent for an SDC class, but with the provision that each district will assign different costs. It's an entrepreneurial type of operation, and they can make their choices accordingly. This isn't a countywide structure. The autism piece is a little bit different. Autism isn't a classroom. Autism is a spectrum of services. When we try to compare costs for autism, we get stuck in the problem that each child is individualistic and completely separate from the child that sits next to them. So we don't have the ability to structure a cost for a classroom. We can say, what is the cost of a paraeducator? What is the cost of those kinds of things? But according to the IEP, we'll have to structure a totally different thing. Remember, when we went after our autism program a couple of years ago in structuring it, we have the the mandate from the board, structure us a program which is extremely high quality, has beneficial aspects for all participants, teachers, parents, children, and is legally defensible. And so when we structure our definition that there will not be this huge spectrum of costs available, that everybody's going to kind of come to the same conclusion over the next couple of years. But we're in an evolution right now. This is our first year, 08, 09. It's going to look different in 09, 10, and those kinds of things will change. But in answer to Chris's concern about as we add costs and things change, we still have a lot of position within our block costs to be able to absorb additional costs and pass those on and remain competitive. We have a number of students from small districts already, large districts too for that matter. Our neighboring districts are sending us kids based upon our surplus seats. And at these kinds of costs, they are looking at this very favorably, and so are we. Because we have seven kids, we have three extra chairs, we might as well make some additional money on it. That's what we're doing.
Thank you, Russell.
Did I answer everybody's concern?
At the moment.
Thank you.
No guarantees for the future. We'll go to Adrian, then to Walt.
Could I just ask?
Oh, you want to follow?
Sure.
Certainly, Walt.
Russell, when you say that over time you think the cost, the definitions will begin to focus more, I was just reading some background material that talks about statewide services being behavior intervention, occupational therapy, and intensive individual services. Is that the kinds of categories of services you expect to shake out over time?
I think that the legal decisions that will start coming down are going to define the programs for us a little more tightly. And where we say that a legally defensible program should be structured this way and District XYZ says, those kinds of things, we look at the legal opinions and obviously we have to do things. The thing we focus on more than anything, because it is the thing we feel is the most defensible, is data collection. If you can collect data on a minute by minute, hour by hour, day by day, and you can present that in evidence in your case, you've got something people could put their fingers on. If you are not collecting data, how do you prove you delivered FAPE? So I think it's a huge piece of what we do.
Okay. Thank you.
I'd like to add to Russell's comment of we collect data to see where we need to go next for the students as well. Not just offensive.
That's what I meant.
Where do we go next?
Okay. Such
you.
A business
thank
guy.
Adrian, is Walt? Did that answer the?
Yes, thank
okay.
You.
Adrian.
Well, I'm glad you mentioned that because data collection takes a lot of time, and you don't have to do
more.
Okay,
it's a choreographed dance to collect data and provide a service to a student that may need reinforcement feedback. Guidance from the teacher. So it does take a choreographed dance. Additionally, we do need a level of data to determine if they've made minimal progress or outstanding progress, not just through observation or a district-wide assessment, but through a level of data collection. And there are different levels of data collection, from the most intensive to a weekly check of how they're doing on their goals.
Now, here's my other question. Since autism is a spectrum, was there some kind of analysis or evaluation of how much service these 38 individuals need? Because I have a student in my class with autism who needs a little occupational therapy once in a while, but nothing that's really more time-consuming or less than any of my other students, basically. So just because they have autism doesn't necessarily mean they need a lot of unique attention from a specialist necessarily in that way.
Again, I agree with you.
Okay.
There are over 75 students in our district identified on the autism spectrum. 38 of them have been identified to need or require a level of service for a paraeducator and or program specialist to help design and implement a specific program.
Okay. So 38 out of 75. Okay, that's what I wanted to know.
Any other questions? Just a quick question, Jackie. Since we are having students coming from other districts, what's involved in assessing where they are or what the other district has done up to that point in terms of program and assessment, and then what we would implement? What's the process in terms of the transition?
The students that come to us with the identification of autism, we sit together as a team, an IEP team, and look at the present levels of performance and develop the goals. The parents are always involved in that process. And then when we receive a student for the first time, we do assess within the first 30, 45 days, again, not a standardized assessment, but through the data collection and snapshot in time. Starting the school year, on our roster, we have approximately 13 students outside of our district with a variety of disabilities that will be in our programs. Of those 13 students, 5 of those students are requiring the autism services as designed in our district.
Thank you very much. Chris?
Russell, one question. I was thinking about the numbers you put up there, and we had a 0.10 psychologist, but I thought we had a psychologist that was assigned solely to the special education, to the special education program at Smith, Los Osos Middle School, and San Luis High School. I'm not sure if I understand how that equates out to a 0.10, and it feels like that should maybe be a little bit higher, and I just was wondering about that.
The allocation's based upon a FTE, and then there's a certain number of classrooms and assignments that psychologist would have. I think that our assessment of their time spent turned out to be a 0.10. I'm not so sure that might not change once we get into the whole thing, but go ahead, Jackie. Finish. Well, at this time, I think that the 0.10 is as close as we can come to being correct for a class.
And the services of the psychologist is really driven by the number of students in a classroom. One class may have 10 students as an average, and we averaged a 0.1. However, there is a class starting with 15 students, so that psychologist will need to be there more frequently. The early intervention program needs more services from a psychologist, more assessment, transition time, transition assessment out of the preschool program. So in the preschool class at Chris Jesperson, there's more time allocated to that psychologist.
Yeah, this is a SDC, and one of the aspects of being able to compare to other districts is to assess how correct we are in our estimates, as it were. And of the three entities put up there, one at a 0.07, one at a 0.15, and we had a 0.10. So on that scale, we were right in the middle of the other two entities. Time will tell how appropriate it is for SDC class to get a 0.10.
Good. Okay. Other questions from the board? Work year calendar revision for our special education paraeducators. Rick?
Thank you. As you know, we enjoy interest-based bargaining with our two classified bargaining units, and our California School Employers Association brought up an interest last spring, and Dr. Eisenrath Rogers sits with us as your board rep in that interest-based bargaining. They brought up an interest to increase the special ed paraeducator classification from a 180-day work calendar to add an extra day, specifically the day before school starts. It was felt, and it was a very compelling presentation, that special ed paraeducators have a lot of needs to address the day before school starts, meeting with their teachers, looking at specific IEP needs, in some cases meeting with the actual clients, and helping as a support staff, and also receiving special ed training that we may need to provide for those individuals. We heard that many of these people are coming anyway the day before school starts, and as hourly employees, that's admirable, but it's not really what we like to see. So it is our a shared interest, we believe, that we should add an extra day for the special ed paraeducators to be a 181-day work calendar, and specifically that other day be the day before school starts. This is actually a discussion item because it's the first time you're seeing it in public, and we would normally bring this back as an action consent. If you were to approve it tonight, we can do this on Monday, the day before school starts. Otherwise, we'd wait for the next school year, and we're prepared either way. So, but we have prepared to have them come back on Monday if it's the board's approval.
Okay, thank you very much, Rick. And we have a question from Mark and then from Chris.
I'm prepared to actually make a motion.
Well, actually, so. I think we have a question.
No, I was going to say that this is a great thing.
Oh, yeah.
I think it'll help kids and help the teachers, so okay. I would support it.
How about
action
a
as well tonight?
Motion by Mark and a second by Chris? Is that fair?
Yeah, that's fine. Thank you.
Okay. We have a motion by Mark to make the revision of the calendar for the paraeducator as set forth in item number 7, and a second by Chris. Any further discussion before the vote? And Mr. Millar has reminded me that the public does have a right to make any comment they wish on this item, since this is the first time it has been aired.
Isn't that true anytime?
Sure. Seeing no rush for the microphone, we'll take the vote. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Passes 7-0. The next to start. Or are you happy
would you
with
like,
the way it's structured?
Dr. Would you like just a brief summary in case the audience is interested in where we're going? At the board retreat, the board expressed an interest in developing a protocol for kind of determining its highest level of interest rising to the top and reaching the board agenda. And the protocol that was suggested by the board in the retreat had sort of three parts to it. The first part was that essentially any idea that a board member raised that was supported by a second board member could be considered as a potential agenda item. Once that happens, once those topics are identified, they would be brought back to a subsequent board meeting, typically the next board meeting, and at that time, the board would decide by vote whether this was a topic that was of interest to them to place on the agenda or not. If it was voted to go on to the agenda, it would. If it wasn't, then it would be processed in some other way. We have in the board agenda item tonight a variety of criteria that the board might use, or questions, essential questions the board might ask about an item before it reached the agenda. And those are available for the board's review and guidance should this go forward as the board's chosen protocol.
Thank you, Dr. Valentine. Walt?
In step two, we have a blank for discussion limited to blank minutes. I'm not sure that we need to set a specific limit as far as minutes are concerned. I think the danger for step two is going to be trying to stay off the actual discussion of the item and keep it focused on whether or not it's going to be on the agenda. So that will probably just require a whip and a chair by the board chairman and chairperson. And then, but I don't think we necessarily need to limit the amount of time. I'd like to know how the others feel.
I agree. Mark?
I'm sorry. I had exactly the same things circled in the same point. We don't limit anything else to minutes. There would really be no reason, and if something needed that much time, then it should probably be allowed to flow. And again, I would agree with whatever the chair would say at that point.
Thank you. And then we have Adrian.
Yeah, instead of a whip and a chair, it's more like good listening skills. I hear that we're all very interested in this topic, so maybe we would like to discuss it further. With just two people wanting to bring an agenda item forward without a real discussion, and we can't discuss it because it's not on the agenda yet. So this was a way to give more information to staff on what people are saying and what they're interested in, kind of more about where it's going, because it is on the agenda, sort of. So that, and that you wouldn't have to staff, I don't know if they would want to prepare something, but you wouldn't have to do full-blown materials and all that. So that was part of the reason for this, to cut down on superfluous work from the staff. It's not necessarily to limit, you know, agenda. I know we have an interest in that, but there are things that should be brought forward, and it's not like we're trying to screen things out necessarily, but it's just to, and I think it might serve the benefit, have or provide a benefit where community would see what's happening and what, and they would know that they might find that they're interested in that and have some input as well. So it's a way of kind of including more, a broader spectrum of people in the activities of the board and the district.
Chris?
Well, first of all, I wanted to thank Dr. Valentine for distilling the thoughts of the board from the retreat. And with a whip and a chair and Robert's Rules of Order, I would support the non-limitation of time. And interestingly enough, I did send to Dr. Valentine and I think John an article from the news from Los Angeles Times that, yesterday about several school boards in California that were placing very, very controversial issues on their agendas, not necessarily related at all directly to schools. And I think this will allow us to surface those kinds of things and have those kinds of discussions. I'm thinking back to 2000 when there was a discussion about a school bond issue which had the time bomb of charter school facilities in it, which has now come back to significantly bite schools in California. So I would support this as it is. And again, thanks to Dr. Valentine.
Okay. Mark?
Yeah, the one other piece that I think may be missing or that we may just want to set aside in our minds is this is fine for nice, big, normal items, but sometimes we're going to have items that we may feel are of an immediate nature, and I just want to make sure that there's a process for bringing those forward.
Point two, which is that the core agenda developed by this president, the clerk, in consultation with the superintendent, I think allows those kinds of things to come forward as well.
Okay. And then, thank you. Catherine, you're okay. And then Walt?
I just want to make an additional comment. I think during step one is an opportunity for individual board members to find out things from staff about it. And then when we come back together again, we have had an opportunity to ask some of those questions. So I'm kind of hoping that will kind of gel the discussion and distill it down to those concerns and things that we actually want to accomplish.
No, I agree also. I think the opportunity to clarify agenda items, think about them ahead of time, provide the public with an opportunity to respond because it'll come back once before it's discussed, would be in our best interest and in the school community's best interest also. Adrian?
I just want to point out it says on page 8.2, the process does not apply to agenda items already moving forward.
Right. Thank you for that. Okay. Yeah. I noticed that too after
okay.
we talked about it.
All right.
Yeah, I was going to wipe the slate clean and then move on, but okay. Thank you, Adrian. Would someone like to make a motion if there are no further comments or questions?
Is this something you would want a motion on, Dr. Valentine, or is this just something that we could sort of put in as board protocol? I don't know. Is this something for an action item? Is this something then that would become board policy? And is it necessary to do that, or is this just an understanding we need to have?
You know, I think I'll weigh in on this one, is that I think to the extent we live with this and it may evolve, it would be better perhaps that we simply go forward with a consensus to go forward than an action that has to be undone in the future.
Yeah, the only thing I would say with our consensus is that we work with this format and not vary from it unless the board decides at a future date that there needs to be some variation. On a future agenda item, but only if we can clearly state it. Okay, so understanding that this is a consensus, I imagine what we will do is ask the board to indicate their support for this by indicating yes, if you support it.
Three times.
Yeah. All in support of creating a consensus? Yes? Any opposed to this as a way of moving forward with agenda items? None. I think we have our consensus. And then I was going to ask Kim, would we take all this as set forth under item 8 and put it on item number 25 where it says advanced agenda under deal with them individually? Number 9, approval of certificated and classified personnel items. Okay. Pull. Number 10, approval of 2006-07-2007-08 agreement with San Luis Coastal Unified School District. Number 11, acceptance of donations. Number 12, disposition of surplus property. 13, approval of furniture and equipment requests. 14, approval of purchase orders. 15, approval of warrants and payroll. I have to pull that because I have a conflict and have to abstain. Number 16, approval of quarterly report on uniform complaint filings regarding the Williams settlement. 17, destruction of Class 3 disposable records. 18, action on claim against the district from Cody Keller. 19, approval of application for New California CDS for Preschool Early Education Program Center. 20, approval of Morro Bay High School Agricultural Vocational Education Incentive Grant Application. 21, approval of out-of-state field study trip for San Luis Obispo High School Band to attend the Midwest Clinic, Chicago, Illinois, December 16th to the 20th, 2008. 22, award of bid number 220, ready to serve pizza. 23, award of bid number 221, snacks and beverages. Could I have a motion for items 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 16, 17, 18, 19, 20, 21, 22, 23?
I will move approval of items 10 through 14 and 16 through 23 in the Glenn Olker style of
I have
motions.
A housekeeping question.
And let me get a second, or do you want to have something unrelated to the vote?
Well, I have I can move to approve it, but I have a housekeeping
okay.
question.
Then we'll do the second, then we'll open it up for any comments. Okay. Second by Marilyn, a motion by Chris, and comments.
Oh, okay, sorry. On item 18, prior to approving it, I think this is just a minor housekeeping change. It notes that there was an accident occurring at San Luis Obispo High School in the description of the agenda item, yet it appears that the accident occurred at Morro Bay High School.
That's true.
So just
thanks.
For to clean that up.
Okay.
So thank you.
That'll be corrected to Morro Bay High School. Okay. Any other comments before we take a vote, Mark?
I just, in the future when we're doing ready to serve pizza and snacks and beverages, I was hoping there'd be samples.
Considering I'm for, this is the eighth year, but I kind of, the more I thought about it today, it just seemed a little bit nuanced. Some aren't so much so, but just quick and dirty on each category.
You're speaking about temporary, probationary,
yes, sir.
And permanent.
Certificate, new contract, employment, you know.
Right. Temporary teachers are those that are hired under several, but essentially in our district, two education code provisions. I don't remember the numbers offhand, although they're probably in the item here somewhere. But the ed code provisions are either categorically funded or soft funded, meaning that we need to hire a temporary person because the funding could go away, or they're being hired against somebody else who is soft funded. And then the other reason would be because of leaves of absences or partial leaves of absences. And so when somebody typically, most people hired into the district get hired in that temporary category because we're still in that place where we have a number of leaves and a number of categorically funded positions. Probationary is the next step in the cycle, and these are individuals who are working towards what is sometimes called tenure, and people are able to be in a probationary contract for up to 2 years and a day, technically. And permanent status are those that have served in the district. They may have served many years as temporaries and been in a probe status before becoming permanent. When somebody goes from temporary status, they automatically go to probationary two if they've served 75% or more of the school year. So that's why some people jump from temporary to directly to probe two. And I don't know if that helps, but simple definitions.
Yeah, thank you very much, Rick. Okay. Then would you like to make a motion, Walt?
Thank you. I'll move approval of item 9.
We have a motion for item 9 to be approved. Is there a second? Second by Chris. Any further discussion regarding item 9? Seeing none, all in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Passes 7-0. And item number 15, I just had to abstain because Deborah Spatafor received a payroll, and I can't vote.
I'll move approval of item number 15.
We have a motion by Chris. Do we have a second?
Second.
We have a second by Mark. Motion by Chris, second by Mark. Any comments, discussion? Seeing none. All in favor?
Aye.
We have all opposed? None. We have 6 in favor, 0 opposed, 1 abstain. Now we're on to advanced agenda items under the new system.